afternoon. Good to see you again. This afternoon, I am talking with you here about the elderly and infirm Christians and their spiritual needs. And so there's a handout here about 4 to 6 pages, depending upon which version you get. Feel free to raise your hand if you don't get one, and we'll be sure to hand one to you. Well, as with this morning, I think it's important that we begin these sessions of these different age groups or phases in life by talking about some basic definitions of what we mean by the terms we're using. This is particularly true, I think, with the topic of the elderly or the infirm. I discovered this very rapidly as I was discussing this with people here at Denver Hills who I consider to be elderly. I quickly discovered that, you know, there is kind of, one needs to be cautious when one uses these terms. Yeah? Now, there is a sense in which, you know, we kind of laugh about that and joke, and I think that I understand that. I get that. But there's also a sense in which the way these terms are used are and can hurt people even sometimes gets at really the heart of some of the things we're going to talk about today in terms of the elderly and their perception of themselves, the value which they think they have in life, the way they're perceived. And so we need to be cautious, I think, in terms of the language we use. Now, I see a lot of gray heads in this room, and that makes me excited because you'll be able to kind of give a lot of feedback, I hope, as we talk about this. I hope you'll forgive me if I misspeak, if I use the wrong phraseology or say something in a way that you wouldn't say. But let me just kind of cover myself here by appealing to the dictionary definition of elderly here. And kind of give you a sense of the challenge that I face, and I think we all face, in defining the elderly. And I think this gets at some more underlying issues, so it's not just a matter of semantics. So if you go to the American Heritage Dictionary, elderly is defined as being past middle age and approaching old age. And then my favorite phrase, rather old. All right. Now, the way I looked at that definition a few times, and it occurs to me, that's saying two different things. So, you're past middle age, you're approaching old age. And then it can also mean rather old, right? Which I take to it can mean a number of things, but I take that to mean you're old, you're quite old. So, but we have here this notion that when we talk about the elderly, what's interesting about this is this uses elderly in a way that we don't often think. I think is elderly here is kind of it can mean kind of old. You get that? So past middle age, approaching old age. You see that? I don't think that's the way we usually use the term. Would you agree with me? That we usually say elderly is old, right? Would that, okay, I just want to make sure that I grew up in Arkansas, so I have to kind of check my English with everybody before I start talking about it. So, but elderly, I think, is kind of another designation for old. And that's not always the case, though. And so we need to be cautious who we're talking to and how they interpret those terms. Let me give you another word here, which we use to describe the group that we're talking about in this class, this discussion. Infirm. Infirm here is defined as weak in body, especially from old age or disease. Okay. So when we talk about elderly or infirm, it's important to realize that when we talk about infirm, we're talking about a subgroup of the elderly, although infirm can refer to people who aren't elderly, right? Someone who is disabled in body due to disease or some other condition. That's not whom I'm considering today, all right? I think their needs are related in some ways to the elderly slash infirm, but I think someone whom, for example, is in their 20s and handicapped in some way, disabled, I think that their needs are of a different nature. I think the thing we should emphasize. And so that's not really, I don't have time today to discuss that. I think that's a worthy topic. But I'm going to focus here on elderly and those elderly that are infirm. And they're not the same thing, as I say. There's a subgroup. Let me give you another way of thinking about this. And I think this will be all we talk about in terms of defining. But I think it's important that we define what we're talking about here. One convention within the literature that talks about the elderly is to define life according to four ages: first age, second age, third age, and fourth age. First age is youth, broadly defined, so from childhood up into kind of 20s, 30s. Second age is middle age, right? Somewhere 40s, 50s, somewhere around in there. Third age is where we begin to talk about what we would say are the elderly. And then the fourth age also include the elderly. So there are two ages here within what we refer to as the elder. And this becomes a very important point. What do you think might be the distinction between the third and the fourth age? So we talk about the two different categories of elderly.
That was those measures that spend 70 years.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. And so in terms of Psalms 90 and 3, so there may be kind of a getting up to up to 70 or third age, and beyond that, it's fourth age. That's how helpful. That's good. And actually, I think kind of the standard definition may not be far off from that in certain ways. But it might be another distinction between third and fourth age. Yes, ma'am. Precisely. And so this is the distinction between those elderly whose physical condition is such in the third age that they are independent. They can live actively on their own. And then those, and then it's a gradual thing. It's not kind of a, sometimes it's a sudden thing, but oftentimes it's a gradual thing. In the fourth age, where one is elderly, but one becomes more and more and eventually entirely dependent, sometimes, depending upon. Nature of that dependency, again, can change, can vary widely. But just in general, that's what we're talking about. I think one helpful distinction to make between the elderly and the infirm is to observe that it's a gradual process of becoming infirm in terms of weakening in body. Another common distinction is between the elderly whom are actively living, can do really whatever they want. They're not in any way limited by their physical condition, their health. For those elderly, older members who are in a situation they exist at kind of doing things. In other words, much of their effort is expended just getting certain tasks done. It no longer becomes, anything I want to do, I can do. It becomes a matter of, okay, I need to get X, Y, and Z done, right? And in order really to exist, things become more of a challenge to do. Finally, to that situation in life, which will befall us all for different durations, surely, but of just being, whether it's suddenly on our deathbed or it's over a prolonged period of time in which we can only even breathe or whatever it be. These are various stages of infirmity, and all of these things are kind of things we're trying to get at, but we'll have to just kind of lump them all together under the category elderly and infirm. All right, so that's what we're talking about. Any comments, questions about that, things you'd add to that as we define what we're talking about? Okay, all right. Okay, so just some basic considerations there. Now, let's move to discuss some biblical examples of aging, and what I want to do is go back to Luke chapter 1 and 2, and look again at the gospel infancy accounts, as we sometimes describe, and find three aged people, and look at their spiritual needs and how they overcame their challenges in their life by doing that which was needful. And so let's look at Zechariah, Simeon, and Anna in Luke 1. After we've talked about them, we'll focus here on Embry Hills, its needs, and apply some of the lessons we've learned from these three elderly people of God to our own lives. Okay? And so, just quickly, look here in Luke chapter 1, and the verse is there on your handout, the first page. And you're familiar with the story, I trust, of Zechariah, who was the father of John the Baptist. And Zechariah, when he learns of the son who is to be born to him, is in the temple. And you remember that Zechariah's first response was what? Was it a faithful response? No. He was disbelieving. He says in verse 20 that he did not believe the words of the angel. And so you have this elderly man who makes a mistake in his path. And it's a doozy. I mean, by mistakes go, this is pretty big in terms of not believing the angel of God before him. But as you read on in the passage, is Zechariah discouraged to the point of no longer being obedient to God? No. And this is a very important point, and it may seem kind of trite at first, but what I'm going to suggest is the ability of someone in advanced age to overcome past mistakes, past missed opportunities, and to keep pushing on and striving is something which is needed. It's a matter of faith in God, trusting in God, and continuing to believe and be obedient to God. This is a real challenge, and as we look at some of the responses from some of the elderly people here at Embry Hills, we'll see that this is something which may be surprisingly important that we need to think about when we think about the needs of the elderly. Okay, so an elderly man who pushed on. So Zechariah was punished by God because of his unbelief, but continued in faithful obedience and praise towards God. You see that in that verse. Look at this next picture of someone who's elderly, it would seem, and advanced in age, in Luke chapter 2, 25-35. This is the story here of Simeon. Now, Simeon, like Zechariah, was an elderly man. And he was a man whom, as we read these passages, we realize that Simeon was going forward in life, living in the shadow of death. In other words, there was a prophecy concerning him that he would see certain things before he died. His death was on his mind. God had told him that he would see the Lord's Christ, the Messiah, before he died. And like many elderly people, this is a matter of kind of death being nearer than it has ever been before. And Zechariah lives within the shadow of death. It's important to observe we all live within the shadow of death in certain ways, don't we? Not promise tomorrow. But for the elderly, this is particularly the case. But in spite of this fact that he lives in the shadow of death, and it says in verse 26, he knew that he would not see death before he had seen the Lord's Christ. And despite of this, does he kind of give up in his service, kind of sit back and stop being of service, even though he knows death is imminent? Not at all. Not at all. And this is the point here, is that as you look at the way Simeon conducts himself, especially towards Mary, you find that he's really looking and desiring and expecting to be of service, whether it be prophesying concerning the Messiah or blessing Mary, something which we don't really he had to do. He went out of his way, it would seem, to bless Mary and to give her insight into the future of her son and her own life. And so one lesson we learn here is that Simeon knew that he would see death. This is something which all of us know we will see, but particularly as we get older, it becomes more poignant. But he continued to hope that he could serve God. He continued to kind of expect and desire that he could be of active service. And you see him being proactive in his service here. Then finally, Anna. Look at Anna here quickly before we move on and look at our own needs here. Anna was an elderly woman. How old was she? It seems from this passage, quite stunning. What's that?
84.
84. You got it. You got it. 84. Now, just a quick side note, to live to be 84 is very unusual in our day, increasingly common, but still very unusual. In the ancient world, this was almost unheard of. Okay, it's important to realize that the life expectancy in Palestine at this time was around 30 to 35, depending upon what you're reading and what you're looking at. So very low life expectancy by today's standards. And it was common to have only two adult generations in society at a time, by and large. And so there was not, like we have today, a generation of adults that are grandparents and that are great-grandparents. It was very rare. So you can imagine a society in which you had people who were in their 20s and 30s and maybe up into their 40s and 50s, maybe. And so the nature of what was advanced age was very different in that age than it is in ours. But still, you had people who would live to these old, old ages, like Anna, who was 84. And so even by today's standards, she's old, but by those standards, she was extraordinarily old. And so you have this elderly woman had she lived? You notice the passage says she was a widow. No indication, other indication that we have that she had family. Maybe she did, but by all appearances of the passage, she lives alone in solitude and serves God, right? And so here's a woman who was apparently alone, very aged, but her service was what? She went to the temple, she worshipped in public in the temple, and she when she learned that Jesus had come, the Messiah had come, what does she do? What does she do? You notice there in verse 38, it says in Luke chapter 2:38, and coming up at that very hour, she gave thanks to God and spoke of him to all who were looking for the redemption of Jerusalem. And so this woman, advanced in age, living alone, and yet is proactive in her service. She's going out seeking how she might tell people who will hear of the one who has come, right? And so we could talk about, in terms of Anna, Anna served God by herself over 50 years, but lovingly worshipped and shared her wisdom with others. Okay, and so we see the characters of these people of advanced age and how they were able to be of service and how they were able to overcome the challenges of unbelief in their own life and even of impending death because they had that which they needed in terms of their faith, their hope, and their love. All right, so let's turn now with those three passages in mind to the spiritual needs of Christians here at Embry Hills. Okay, and so in addition to looking at what the Scripture says about these needs, let's also attend to what we did another survey here of the elderly, or at least some of them here at Embry Hills. The numbers were significantly smaller than with regard to the young families. We have at least six respondents to the survey, and then I talked also to a number of others about this. So I'll give you some of that feedback as we go along. Same questions about greatest concerns, three or four. What are your two or three greatest needs? What have you done to provide for these spiritual needs, etc.? So same questions as before with the survey we looked at with the young people. Okay, but before we get into those and talk about what those tell us about the needs of the elderly, notice too that we had the same three questions at the beginning that asked the elderly to quantify the strength of their relationship. Okay, again, caveats about the limitations of doing this, but I think it's helpful to see how the elderly that we that surveyed assess the relationship. Well, this is really blurry, but you can. And the first one is on a scale of 1 to 4, having 4 being the strongest. How would you rate your spiritual relationship with God? Okay, and so you can see here on that it was 3.6. I think that says 3.6. The next one is relationship with physical family, 3.4. Relationship with Christians at Embry Hills, 3.5. Right now. Conclusions to draw from this we can make, but just to remind you, in comparison to the self-assessment done by the young families, okay, on these same exact questions, young families with regard to the relationship to God were 2.86 compared to 3.86 for the older Christians. On relationship to physical family, they were 3.1 compared to 3.4 with regard to physical family. With regard to Christians at Embry Hills, they were 2.57 compared to 3.5 for elderly Christians. Okay. Now, conclusions to draw from that. What conclusions do we draw? Maybe none. Maybe no one's so brass as to make draw conclusions. I'll tell you what someone in the preceding class did, so no one has to kind of put themselves forward. He commented, well, it looks like the elderly people are getting their stuff together here. They kind of got it. They've learned some lessons, was how he put it. And maybe that's what that means. Maybe that is what that means. And there's no one knows the heart but God. And we don't know if we had not surveyed, if we'd surveyed more elderly, what the results might be. A lot of open questions here. But I think this is indicative here. Perhaps, yes, sir. That's right. And you remember Marty's comment, I think it was Marty that said last night, that as the hope is as we get older, our understanding of our wants and our desires, understanding of our needs start to match up. We learn lessons, we have greater wisdom and insight. And so maybe that's reflected in these numbers. Maybe. Yes. All right. Okay, so I think one thing I take from this is that whether or not this is the case, that perhaps these that we ought to pay us really close attention to what's being said here about spiritual needs and treat it from people who think that they have strong relationships with God, their physical family, their Christian. One final thing I'll mention is I think I talked to someone after or I observed in someone's responses kind of a tendency to be wiser about the way they answered this. When asked, what's your relationship to your physical family, they answered, well, which one? I thought that was very wise, because as our family grows, so you're a great-grandparent or a grandparent or something, you have relationship to multiple families, which have gone their own way, done different things, and with your relationship to one family might be quite stronger than relationship to another, depending upon location, spiritual status, these sorts of things. And I thought that was very insightful. And then when asked, what is your spiritual relationship with other Christians in Embry Hills, they said, how can I assess that when there's over 300 Christians in Embry Hills? And it kind of resisted the tendency to generalize, and so I think there was wisdom there as well. So if you allow me to kind of continue in the same method here of looking for the needs for faith among elderly Christians by kind of pulling together survey responses, and let's look for trends here. First of all, number two, when asked what is your greatest concern, the answer was be ready when Jesus returns, see my unsaved family saved, and rejoice in Christ. One of the respondents said, my greatest need is to comfort and reassurance of God's words concerning preparedness for death and eternity. Okay, now this brings in the kind of the temporal aspect of this, that one is on a journey in life and is growing closer to death here. Number 10, ability to think on the good and not dwell on the bad. That's a very cryptic sort of statement. But I take that as an important indicator that as one grows older, one realizes that there is bad there as well, that one could dwell on, but does not. And so let's think about that more. Number 12, I think elaborates number 10 a little bit. My need is to realize the concept that God's grace keeps us safe and not allowing Satan to make us feel as if we have not done anything or all that we should in our lives to receive his blessings. And I think it's a very profound statement of need. Another person I talked to talked about how the longer you live in life, the more opportunity there is for you to realize that you've made mistakes, that you've missed opportunities. And the flip side of that is you also realize there's less time, and perhaps it's less time to make up for it or somehow do something to make it right, or also the realization that one's life is shortened to the point that really the mistakes you've made are just going to have to stand, and you're going to have to trust that God forgives. And those missed opportunities are missed, and you may be unable to make up for them for a variety of reasons. And so this is a number of needs. Any observations you have about the needs which are being stated here by early Christians? So what are their needs? One thing that I would observe here is, just to kind of maybe bring it to a summary here, elderly Christians, and this gets to the comments, need to entrust their past life to God. Of course, like us all, they need to entrust their entire life to God, sure. But the thing that we hear, for example, we see in Zechariah, when his past mistakes, overcoming those and continue to serve God. And what I hear in the comments of early Christians is the longer you live, the more the need to really trust that God will forgive those mistakes that have been made. And so that's a need there, which perhaps is important to think. One, you know, there's Roger Pink in the class before said that he had heard a phrase that is stuck with him, that you can either be bitter or you can make it better, right? And so there is this kind of this need for early Christians not to, as he put it, to be bitter about past mistakes or to, but to try to make it a better. Have you seen this? Has anybody seen this need within elderly Christian, the elderly in general? And if so, how have you seen it? Kind of this need to really entrust their past life to God. How does it manifest itself? Anybody want to give it a shot and kind of share with us? Because we're going to ask, how can we help? How can we help? You know what? That's me. I think the answer is coming on the phone here. You know what? That happened to me in the other room, and I thought I had turned it off. I apologize for that. Actually, I'm going to go take this. Just kidding. Just kidding. has anybody seen this? Because we're going to ask, how can we help address these needs? Yeah. That's a good point. Also, that's a good point.
So something to be aware of. I don't know the answer to how to fix it.
Yeah. Well, that's a helpful point, is that to attend to the question of when someone became a Christian, because that can affect this significantly. Sometimes. Yes, sir. Sure.
When I look at that in the entrusted past life.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
What specifically she may or may not be holding on to in her past life.
Right.
Quote.
Yeah.
And that I'm struggling with.
And that may, so it may manifest itself in ways in the present.
Right.
Right.
Which
yeah. Marty, are you going to say something about that, or?
I guess I think in three ways that might be. One is Larry's mission. There's a sense of
Good point. So that gets at what you were talking there. Okay, yes, Wayne.
I was just going to say, just based on that statement out there, what I have seen is that we reported that they have chosen to seek out the armed forces and give them lots of advice about avoiding things that they may have to recover.
Okay. And so let's hold that. I think that's a very important point there. And so that could be one upshot of this kind of entrusting one's life, is to give advice about how that happens and what mistakes that have been made that might not should be made in other people's lives. So good. And so there are a number of passages that which we could look at which get at the need to have wisdom in our life. Let me Psalms 90 is an important one in terms of counting numbering our days and realizing that we are limited and that we have to live our life wisely in terms of how we think about our life. Let me pass over that for sake of time and attend to Philippians chapter 3:13, which is really focused on what we're talking about here. Paul is not talking specifically about the elderly, but I think expresses this idea where he says, "I do not regard myself as having laid hold yet, but one thing not I do, forgetting that which is behind and reaching forward to that which is ahead." And so this idea that there is a time there if one has been repentant and is in proper has put behind that sin to lay it aside, to forget it, and to entrust it to God. And Paul talks about that. Looking back at the survey results on the need for hope in terms of what Christians, elderly Christians, should be desiring and what they should be expecting in their life, you see these sorts of comments in terms of what's your greatest concern? My declining health. Number three, possibility of losing my spouse, losing independence, ability to care for oneself and others. And these are words which kind of roll off my lips, but if you're living these things, these are very grave realities. And I don't want to make at all light of it. Number five, getting to heaven and seeing my family doing the same, both a physical and Christian family. Right? And then number six, to maintain my relationship with God, my family and fellow Christians in light of my pending inability to function in the same manner to which I have been accustomed in the past. All right. And so these are all needs that have to do, I think, so many of these have to do with the reality that as time goes by, one's body degrades, one's physical condition, one's situation in life worsens in terms of merit, your spouse dies, you lose independence, as we've talked about, in terms of the different ages. And you have the inability to function in the same manner. And as you look down the road, what is your vision about those things? How do you think about those? What do you desire for your life in light of those? What do you expect? And so this is a real challenge, particularly as you get older. And so what's the need here? As Christians face these sorts of realities, what are their spiritual needs? We could list a number of physical needs, I'm sure, that they do have and are important, and that the Bible gives us instruction to provide, whether it be for widows or for others. But what are some spiritual needs here as their body degrades and they face infirmity? Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So very practically, providing, doing things so that they can still be active in their spiritual life. They can read God's word or pray. They can still serve God. Right? I mean, that's essentially what you're talking about there, is making that possible for them, would you say? Yes. Yeah. And I hope you heard, I mean, one thing that she said there was the way that they bear their infirmities, the example that they have and the way that they bear themselves up and the strength that they exhibit in the midst of great pain oftentimes. And that's the way that they serve, isn't it, by that example. Yeah. Let's go ahead. Yeah. Yeah. Right, right. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For itself.
Right, right, quite right. Yeah. And I think you all are very helpfully already moving ahead to kind of thinking about how can we help with these needs that they have, and they're identifying needs that are existent. One way of thinking about this, and it kind of gets at, I think, a number of things we've already said about enabling their service, is that elderly Christians need hope for continued service to God. Certainly, we all need hope of heaven, hope of eternal life and our deliverance from this world. But also, as one gets older, there is that intervening service between right now and eternity, where physical infirmity, challenges of the body and of the mind create a special obstacle to continued service. And one need is to really desire and to expect that one will be a continued service. Now notice, I didn't say that they're going to be an active living service. So they're going to be picking up everybody to bring into church. I mean, that's you know, as we get older, our bodies change and our lives change. And so it may be that that as one even gets down to the state of just kind of being in this world, being able to do very little, as you were pointing out, that in itself, the way you bear up under that, that's a way of serving, isn't it? Yeah. 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 Yeah, it is encouraging, as she said. Yeah. So, it was some of the gray heads are saying, what? Help us be of service by speaking up, right? Honesty all around, right? Yeah. So, two passages. One to observe. Wait, I missed that. What did he say?
He wants to make a point.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. All right. Anyway, so no, I'm kidding.
Well, you know, you can talk to him to death, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of
yeah. Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
Blessed,
yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. And that's the challenge, and I think that's true for most of the groups here, is that we don't usually stop and reflect and kind of define what our needs are, and that's one reason to do it. I mean, I think there's value in kind of stopping here and thinking about things which we, on a certain level, know, but oftentimes don't articulate. But thanks. So, observe, just a point to observe, on 1 Timothy chapter 5 and Titus chapter 2, the scriptures go to great length to describe the qualifications or the characteristics which, frankly, elderly Christians should have. And I think if you look at kind of the implications of this is that they have these qualities, these good characteristics, these virtues, so that they might be active in service, whatever that may be. And so whether it be the older widow whom is well reported of for good works so that she might be supported by the church, or the older men whom are temperate, dignified, sensible, etc. Those things are there for a reason in terms of the service, and elderly Christians need to be hoping that they might be of service using those qualities. The question then becomes, how do we help them with that? Finally, in terms of the need for love here that elderly Christians, we all have, but focusing especially here now on elderly Christians, how to help, the first response was, what's my greatest concern? How to help my family when so often alone and apart from them, right? People to talk to, assembling with the saints. I had an extended conversation with a sister whom expressed, I think, really soul-searching grief over her inability to be at services as often as she wanted to, and the influence that has upon other Christians, maybe because they don't understand why she's not here due to the condition she has. Love, support, respect, and prayer are my needs. Nine, what do I need? Manifestations of love and caring. In other words, words of encouragement, kind deeds, and time. 11, chances to exhibit spiritual strength, recognition of wisdom to offer spiritual answers, reinforcement by others of their spiritual strengths. Those are things that one can do. And 12, not to be discounted as a resource for wisdom in our experiences of life. So these are when asked, what are your needs? These are needs that are expressed. And one way of kind of expressing that is that elderly Christians need to love in a variety of ways, but one in particular is with their gifts of wisdom. And this runs through the scripture, that one way that the elderly Christians can love and be of service with an agape love is by sharing their knowledge and their insights. Job 12:12, wisdom is with aged men, with long life is understanding. And you have various examples of this in action, Peter and also Paul describing what elderly Christians should be to the younger Christians as well. So, a number of needs there that we can identify. The question is, what else would you say? What other needs would you identify that elderly Christians, spiritual needs that elderly Christians have? Anything else? Yes, Patrice. Yeah. Right. Thank you. Yeah. I'm sorry. Please, what was your comment?
One thing that the elderly sometimes lose is their hearing, and I'm one of them. I don't know what others have said, so I may say the same thing, but I feel that two things I need is for if anyone sees me doing something that I shouldn't do, that they would please tell me. Because I feel like my rest of my journey is on earth isn't too long. Mm-hmm. And I sure do want to go to heaven. Mm-hmm. And two, if they point out things that I can do, that I should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm enjoying this meeting so very much. Yeah. I'm thankful that I happen to be here.
Yeah. And I thank you for that. And I would say that your sentiment is echoed by many of the other elderly Christians that I talked to. And the way this was put was, what do I need? I need teaching. I need encouragement. I need exhortation. I need someone to tell me when I'm doing wrong. And I think that one thing a misunderstanding would be to say that an elderly Christian, by the fact of being elderly, has arrived and somehow are where they need to be. And you're I think, calling us and reminding us that it's a constant growth all through our life, and that's one thing we're trying to emphasize, is that all the way we need to be in service and growing and excelling. And so thank you for that. That's very, very helpful. Anything else there in terms of needs? All right, so we have about 15 minutes here, which is good. And so let's move to the question of how can we be of service? All right. Now, how can we be of service in terms of, now, the way that I had phrased it specifically, but we've also talked of other ways, is helping elderly Christians entrust their past life to God. So, in other words, having faith that God's grace covers those sins that they should, and that it should. And how can we encourage and support and help elderly Christians to grow in their faith? Yeah. Okay. Okay. So just in terms of kind of very basic here, in terms of knowledge being a very important aspect of faith, being able to sustain that, reading for them, caring for them in ways that they continue to be of service and to be able to live the life of a Christian in terms of the basic activities and disciplines that we have. Reading. So you said sustain them. Literally there, kind of hold them up there in terms of any weaknesses there. How can we help elderly Christians grow in faith? Yes, sir. Yeah. So sustain. So this aspect of transport, right? That physical presence there. That's really very important. Get them here. Yeah. And I think oftentimes too, there's a need to be proactive in finding out who needs the transport, and so attending to who's not here and why not, and how can we be of help? Yes, ma'am. So the one thing you said there is emphasizing, as Jim has done, emphasizing the confidence that we can have. There comes that word again. In God's promises, that's one thing there. And so if the challenge is for the older person to have faith that those and all of us, particularly when you've lived a long life, that those things are done, I can forget those, because those are God, and I can't do anything more. If that's the problem, then one encouragement we need is that to be reminded that's the case. And that's something that we can do and talk to each other. Yes, Joe?
Yeah, as a young person, in relation to the older person, keeping the values of their input.
Right. And so seeking, and we'll come back to this, and so seeking input, okay? And one way of thinking about that in regard to building faith we all have negatives accumulated in our life, whether it be any of the three that Marty kind of indicated there. But one thing that we can do to help build faith is to not to overemphasize the positive influence, but to emphasize the positive influence that person has had in our life. One way that can be kind of manifested is seeking wisdom and insight from an elderly person. Yes, Tim.
My grandma was 90 years old.
So this is not necessarily, as we might call it, kind of a charity case. We are developing in faith together. And that's what you're emphasizing. And so be Christian towards the elderly. And iron will sharpen iron, as it says. Yes, I see another hand right here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. And so a matter of communicating, right? Communicating and making sure that, as with all Christians, that there's understanding there. And so one thing, and if you know that someone, if you have a grandmother or someone who you know often doesn't hear, or you could get a CD for them, that shows real concern and I think is a way to build faith. It's a really good point. Yes? Great point. All right, there's more things we could say. Let's move on then to the question of how can we help elderly Christian to grow in hope. Now, the way I emphasize this was continuing service, but there are other aspects of hope, whether it be a eternal life, hope for one's salvation of one's family, other things. And so, give me strategies here. This is very helpful in terms of very practical things here we can do. How about with regard to hope? What can we do? Yes. Good.
But I think it's important when you again go back to when you focus in how you define elderly with the disease, where they become isolated to me in the sense of you're not able to transport them, so they're in the same place, and therefore they're isolated. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? So what you do is what you say in deeds and words that they say, you know what, there is, what we are growing spiritually, we are going to make it.
Right. And so, the notion of manifesting one's spiritual progress so that others might be encouraged and built up, is a very prominent theme. And so what I hear you saying is that, particularly within a family or when you have an older person who's made efforts to try to have a godly family or to have an influence that's for good, to manifest that has had an influence is one way to kind of create hope that I've accomplished and can continue to accomplish something.
No greater joy.
Yeah, that's precisely it. So there is no greater joy than to see. Yes. Yes, go ahead.
I was just going to go along the thankfulness. I mean, between my brother and I, we put my dad through some pretty heavy times, just falling away and coming back. And, so it's very important, especially for the young folks, to go to those who are old and to thank them for the salvation.
Yeah.
And,
Good. And so continuing, I mean, I'm going to pick up on that because that leads us to love, but to help others to grow in hope, quite honestly, there needs to be a giving of opportunities for service, and oftentimes it's a matter of asking, right? Of asking for assistance, right? Increasingly, we Google to find questions, answers to questions, and I think that happens to the detriment of the kind of the knowledge base we have here. And so it could be anything from a recipe to one's spiritual status before God. There is a pool of knowledge here which we have a responsibility, we have a commandment to draw upon. And that's something that we should take seriously as we help elderly people meet these needs. One danger, I saw it in my grandparents, both of whom were gospel preachers, my grandfathers, is one can, if one has been of great service and then as one gets old is not asked to do things, there can be real kind of resignation and resentment that can grow up about that. And that's an awful shame. And it's a shame on us, I think, if we allow that to happen. There's responsibilities both ways, but I think we should take hold of those. Finally, with regard to love, in terms of ways that we can help elderly grow in a love. And we talked about sharing wisdom. We're kind of already segued into that. What are ways that we can help elderly Christians love us by sharing wisdom or doing other things so they can be strengthened there? I think practical strategies here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing I'll say here very specifically is for us not to underestimate the value of stories that are told by our elderly. It's a lot of studies have been done on this, and it's a documented fact, and it probably gels with what you know, that as one and a person gets older, the tendency to tell narratives, stories, increases. Variety of reasons for that, just a variety more experiences they share. But also, stories are a way that human beings, as they get old, make sense of their lives and discover meaning and value. And so what for us might be a quick 5-second answer, for someone who has lived and has found meaning and value in things that are interconnected, oftentimes they'll tell a longer narrative, a longer story, in order to convey the same point, which we might, or more points, which we might tell in a very short time. And I think one way that we really support our elderly Christians is to realize that there is enhanced wisdom in the way that our elderly speak, in the way that they live, and that we ought to respect that. And that respect, and I'm sharing what I know you agree with, respect goes from everything from standing when they approach, to looking in the eye when they speak to us, to listening to their entire story, and attending to each word, knowing that there's a lifetime of wisdom behind that. And so these are ways, I think, by showing respect, we support them in their need to be loving us with their wisdom. And so these are practical things that we can do. A lot of other things. Let me ask you, people are coming in. Any other burning issue which we need to bring up? You said, we didn't bring this up. We have to mention it in this class. Anything else that we want to say about meeting the needs of our elderly? Once, twice? Okay. Thank you so much for your insights. Very helpful.